Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. Today's guest can be described as an entrepreneur and an inspirational innovator. And while most business persons may think of retailing in shopping centers, crowded roadways, or high traffic intersection, our guest, Tarina, and her husband opened their store in a small rural town of McLeod, population of about 1,100. And the other, Ingenia, Uganda. Yes, that's in Africa. Raised by a loving mother and father, Tarina grew up poor, dreaming of what joy there would be to have enough money to attend a movie. This drove her to work hard so as to never live with regrets of wanting, which were instilled by her father. From her mother, teaching to be nice, respectful, and never to lie, but most importantly, her faith in God. Well, it worked. Inducted to the Athletes Hall of Fame at the University of Nevada and an 8-time winner, All-American, qualifying in the U.S. Olympic trials for swimming, but the real topper was adopting two sons from Ethiopia to join their family of three other children. And this, there is just the beginning. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Tarina Dutton, welcome to today's show.
Thank you so much for having me, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you very much, Tarina. Tarina, you have a star-studded background. Olympic trials, Hall of Fame, husband who played in the NFL and the ACL, football, sister that was a top 10 in American Idol in 2009?
2008.
I was close.
Yeah, you were.
and also sang with Merle Haggard. What a fascinating launch of your life. How would you describe your life now? How would you define yourself?
I would say it's definitely a exciting, but also very challenging life. We do a lot to serve the community, and we like to get in there and really serve people. And you know, with that comes a lot of blessings and a lot of challenges. And we love what we do, mm-hmm. but our life is definitely, we have a great time, you know, doing it together with my husband and with our family.
Share with us what you actually do.
Well, we run a nonprofit, and so it's brought us overseas off and on over the course of the last 10 years. We have lived in Ethiopia and also in Uganda. We've worked with street kids and have done different things in that realm. We've also worked in the area of preventing the circumstances that lead to children being trafficked, abandoned, and orphaned. And so we love what we do, but, you know, with it always comes challenges, but again, we love it.
Well, life is made to have challenges.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
No pain, no gain, as I remember.
Yeah.
Tell us, let's go back a little bit to some of your swimming events or the years when you were swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how swimming got all started and became so much part of you. I mean, my goodness, to be in the U.S. trials validates that there's an awful lot of planning and effort that went into this. So share with us how this all swimming evolved.
All right.
And to reach its remarkable heights.
Yeah, when I was a little girl, I was actually a gymnast. And so I became an Olympic level gymnast, but some circumstances in eighth grade caused me to, I was injured, and we lived about an hour from the gym. And so the back and forth of driving 2 hours to practice every day and the injury, I ended up quitting. And so through high school, I did gymnastics for fun. I did track, swimming just to stay in shape for gymnastics, and diving. And eventually I realized that I had a gift in swimming. And so I ended up getting a scholarship to go to college in swimming.
And you were living where?
I was living in Seattle.
In Seattle.
Yes.
But you were born in Germany. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you speak German?
I don't.
You don't speak German?
No. Maybe thank you. That's it.
And how old were you when you left Germany?
I was a baby. So my parents moved soon after.
Oh, I see. So you have no karate?
No.
You missed all the beer gardens.
I did.
Yeah. So what instilled this focus on sports, and to such degree that you worked at this?
I really think I remember watching Mary Lou Retton growing up, and I believe that is what inspired me to want to pursue the Olympic dream. Mm-hmm. And when I quit gymnastics, I really, in high school, enjoyed different sports. And then as I entered college, I got a full ride scholarship to swim at the University of Nevada. And it was really there that I recognized that I qualified for Olympic trials. And I think it was actually at that point when I realized, oh, okay. I was already taking it serious, but that was when I became even more focused. So
was it solely, were your parents athletes?
Yeah, they were in high school, but not. They didn't pursue sports after high school.
So that must have had some influence, however, on your view of sports, I presume.
Yeah, definitely. My father, one of the things that you had mentioned about not having a life of regret, it was really about he was a really gifted athlete, and he had tried out for the Seattle Mariners back in the 70s, but he ended up just through different situations not pursuing it, and so he had a lot of regrets about mm-hmm. quitting, and had always encouraged me growing up to pursue what I was dreaming, you know, my dreams, mm-hmm. and to never give up and to just overcome challenges and injuries. And so a lot of what inspired me was really his words. Mm-hmm. So
well, it's really interesting when we go back and try to figure out, you know, what influences or made us turn to the left instead of the right and so forth and so on, that because of your father's maybe not being able to, it was just a lesson that he learned that he wanted to stress with you. And I assume you had brothers and sisters?
Absolutely.
Tell us about them.
Yeah, they also, my brother ended up going to the University of Oregon as a football player. Uh-huh. And my sister was a singer, so mm-hmm. she took a different path, but sure. She pursued singing. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think really both of our parents really supported us, encouraged us to, you know, pursue the things, the gifts and talents that we uh-huh. had been given, and to never quit.
So you learned the discipline of working.
Absolutely.
Your parents were hard workers, I presume.
Yes.
Tell us about your mother.
Okay. Yeah, my mother, she really had a passion to be a stay-at-home mom. And so because of that, my father actually worked extra jobs. He worked up to 3 jobs at a time. He would be working out in the rain. He was a very hard worker. And when I look back and I think of him, that's probably one of the things I remember most is how hard he worked for our family mm-hmm. so that my mother could be home for us. And mm-hmm. so she was driving us to sports and,
taxi mom, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cooking and taking care of us and wanting us to come home from school and have someone there. And
very important.
Very important. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she was very influential in our upbringing.
How did he manage 3 jobs?
He just worked very early in the morning until late at night. He would come home for dinner. Mm-hmm. And then he would go back. And,
really?
Yeah. And then he would be out until about 12. He worked at my friend's
garage.
Oh,
my goodness.
Or his friends, I should say.
Uh-huh. And what line of work was he in?
He ran his own business, and he did detailing on vehicles. He mm-hmm. didn't repair vehicles, but he did pinstriping and window tinting and things mm-hmm. like that. So he worked for the dealership, and he would work for my friend or his friend's mm-hmm. Garage and help fix cars and things like that. So.
What a sacrifice to work 3 jobs.
Absolutely.
All for the family.
Yes.
Right? Are your parents still living?
Yes.
And I presume they're still very, very yes. Well, they have to be very proud
yeah,
of
Yeah, they've been married for about 42 years.
Oh, well, good for them. Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. So what takeaway did you have from your father, aside from what you just said of mm-hmm. learning never to give up and obviously working hard? What other pickup did you have from your father?
I would say that if I could give one word to really exemplify who he was as I was a child growing up, it would be just giving, generous. I mean, mm-hmm. everything that he did was for the sake of other people. I remember him sponsoring a child through World Vision, and I believe that's what planted seeds in my heart, which would, you know, yield fruit later. But he, you know, would pick up hitchhikers. He would always buy food for people on the streets. He just constantly,
really, huh?
Absolutely. He constantly looked for ways and it just was who he was.
Isn't that a beautiful thing to teach a child?
Absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your brother and your sister.
Well, they, we're just a close-knit family, mm-hmm. and so we love each other deeply. We're still obviously in touch. We live in three different states, so that makes uh-huh. it difficult, but, you know, we're constantly just in contact with each other.
Uh-huh. And obviously your mother was part of a big influence of keeping the family together, but being a home mom,
for
right?
Sure.
So tell us about your mother.
Well, she definitely... I want to say they were both the backbone of the family, but she definitely played a very instrumental role in the faith of our family. She really has a solid faith and really loves God. And so that was a big part of our upbringing, was really pouring into not just us being successful or pursuing dreams, but really being focused on building character, mm-hmm. having integrity, you know, doing the right thing, showing honor to people, respecting mm-hmm. others, things like that. So she was very much, her focus was, you know, she drove us to different sports and practice, and she did all mm-hmm. of that. But she, I know she took very seriously the idea of just really pouring into her children and really raising up great mm-hmm. men and women who gave back to their communities and lived lives of integrity.
We said in the opening of the show that she taught you to be nice, respectful, and to never lie.
Right.
And those are pretty good things, aren't they?
I can't say I've always done that, but I try.
Do you remember any time, any specific incidences where she may have, you may have said something or done something or expressed something, as she came back and said, well, that isn't really what I mean?
I think, there were so many situations where she would always take a circumstances, even just with fighting, you know, with siblings or things like that, and she would always turn it back to the way that we treat people. One of the verses that was very common during that time was in Psalms 19:14, and it was, may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart bless your name, or may the meditations of my heart bless your name. And so it was not only about the things we said, but uh-huh. really the way that we thought and uh-huh. and just spoke to right. people, and really being honorable. So she really poured in our lives that way.
And I presume that all of you went to church.
Yes, we did. Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. And the words that the biblical reading that you just made to us, could you repeat that and tell us where that is?
Yes. It's in Psalms 19:14.
Uh-huh.
And it's, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart bless your name.
And your mother would say this to all of you kids,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what a beautiful launch. Very comfortable living. I know that you grew up not on the highest financial districts, mm-hmm. and that you had some really, really difficult times as a family,
yeah.
making things meet. Tell us about some of the more difficult times in your childhood.
Definitely. I think the sacrifice that was made for my mom to be able to stay home and invest in our lives the way that they, you know, really felt was important. My dad, you know, like I mentioned, he worked up to three jobs. And so funds were really tight, you know, being on one income, having three children. But there were times where things were a little more comfortable, and then there were times where the power would be off. Or
you had the power turned off?
Yeah, we did. And and so, you know, there were some highs
and lows. That's a very challenging situation.
Yeah.
Not to be able to flip a light switch on or turn right. on turn on the heater or
right. Maybe it was training for living in Africa later. I don't know.
Well, we're going to get a lot to that.
Right.
So, I know that you did go to the movies.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But this was something that you had mentioned that mm-hmm. many times you just didn't have folks did not have the money to give you a quarter
yeah.
to all three of you to go see a movie.
Yeah, I do remember, especially in high school, you know, you don't remember the younger years as much. You're not aware of the financial situation
sure,
quite
right.
as much. But in high school, I do remember times where my friends would be going to a movie and we couldn't afford to go. And being an athlete, you know, I did four sports in high school and was on the dance team. And so I didn't have time for a job. And so I did feel the you know, the crunch, I guess, of the finances a little bit more at that mm-hmm. time. So,
well, when you were a gymnast, I mean, you started at a very, very young age. I mean, 4 and a half, that's pretty young.
Yeah, it was actually, I started at 5, but it was very sporadic at that time. And then uh-huh. I really started at 8 years old, about 8 and a half.
And your practice routine was like how?
It was, so the first year, it was just building up to team level. And once I made team, I was training about 4 to 4.5 hours every day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's quite a commitment.
Yeah, it was.
And so obviously Taxi Mom, right, took you to all these practice sessions.
Yeah.
And did your brothers and sisters engage in any type of this activity during the same time frame of growing up?
No, my brother did, you know, Pop Warner football and baseball, but the commitment level is not really the same. Gymnastics is pretty unique that way once you reach a certain point, especially because, you know, a peak age for a gymnast is in our, you know, teen years usually. So we were really focused and training and putting a lot of hours in, traveling on weekends for meets at a very young age.
What did you learn from that experience?
Wow.
I mean, to today's living, what actually did you learn and gain from those years of working?
Oh, so many things. Just perseverance, hard work, self-discipline, mm-hmm. You know, teamwork, encouragement, mm-hmm. and, you know, encouraging other people, you know, pushing through injuries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, overcoming fears, overcoming obstacles. Gymnastics really taught me a lot and mm-hmm. really laid a good foundation.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Tarina, we're going to have to take a break right now, so we're going to be right back in a few seconds.
All right.
You're listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Supported Radio, and I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Tarina Dutton. Tarina, we're going to jump a little bit, right? And I'd like to hear, you grew up in what I think a very structured, very healthy environment. I mean, every aspect of what you're conveying to us is a very healthy situation. And somewhere in there, I'm going to fast forward, but you end up in Ethiopia.
Absolutely.
And you have a store, an actual store in Ethiopia. You've adopted children, right?
Right.
So that covers an awful lot of territory. What were the beginning seeds of that hopscotch?
Well, my husband and I met in college, and so he was an athlete. He played football, and his team was involved in a lot of community work, and so we really had a passion to be involved in the community, and we found that the next step was to start a ministry. And we really didn't know what we were doing, but we just held it before the Lord and said, show us where to go and what to do. And that landed me at our church.
Now, this was after you were married?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was about 6 years into our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met with the missions pastor at our church and really just asked him about different opportunities to go and see, you know, what God had. And it ended up being an orphanage in Ethiopia. And so he said, you know, I just got back last week from Ethiopia.
This
and
was your pastor said.
Yes. And we need people to go this summer and check it out. And I said, all right, we're going. So, and that's how we landed in Ethiopia.
So tell us about that first experience in Ethiopia.
Yeah, it was extremely overwhelming. You know, you try to imagine what it will be like to see poverty firsthand. You know, you see pictures and you hear things in the news and it breaks your heart, but there's nothing that prepares you, I don't think, for seeing it firsthand. And so I was really overwhelmed immediately, just going from the capital to the guest house where we were going to stay for the night. And just a lot of need. There were street kids, you know, all over. There were little children we saw on the street at night, just roaming the streets, 2-3 years old. And so it just broke our hearts. We had 2 children at that point. And you just can't imagine if that was your child.
Mm-hmm. So these children, were they abandoned? Were they just living on the streets, fending for themselves, or what was the situation?
Yeah, it's estimated that over 500,000 children that are street kids in Ethiopia.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
A half a million. And what is the population of Ethiopia?
I believe it's 7 million. Don't hold me to it.
No. But give or take.
Yeah, give or take.
So there are hundreds of thousands of children. Yeah. And how are there? I mean, check in. Hotels or food banks or
no, there's not opportunity and
the unemployment rate is very very high. If you correct?
Yeah, I do know the unemployment rate in Uganda where we lived later. I'm assuming it's very similar. Which in Uganda was 80%.
Oh my goodness,
the country is unemployed. So I'm not.
You can't run an economy that way.
Yeah, it's really difficult. So there's a lot of kids. What happens often is that they come from the villages seeking work in the capital, and when they get there, there's not work. And so they end up being stuck there. And so
how do they subsist? How do they eat?
They beg. They dig in the trash. They obviously there's some ministries and churches that are helping to care for orphans, and it's so many different ways, but a lot of begging. We saw, kids were running up to our car windows and asking for food and money and things like that. So it was heartbreaking.
And I would assume that many girls are led to prostitution.
Absolutely. A lot of girls are actually tricked into either prostitution and are being trafficked. So, and that's a very huge problem.
When you say trafficked, what do you mean by that?
Actually, so a lot of times with girls, we are partnered with a ministry that helps to rescue girls and also street kids and reunify them with their families back in the villages. But what happens is they come to the capital for work, or there's a variety of situations that end up ends up for them being on the street. And so what happens is either they're told they're going to get a job in the capital, and they go with somebody who ends up tricking them and forcing them into, forced prostitution or being trafficked, enslaved, really. There's a variety of ways that girls end up, and it's a dangerous place for girls to sleep. It's a dangerous place for any child to sleep, but
and
in particular girls.
Where do they sleep?
Anywhere, just on the streets.
Really?
Yeah, all over. So
pretty hard to imagine. I mean, I see our people here in our community, street people.
Yeah.
Living out in the street with rain and a parka on them, and that's heart-drenching in itself.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And to see children just and here we have, I think, an abundance of food. I mean, these folks are eating for the most part.
Right.
But to have to support that many children.
Yeah.
Takes an enormous organization and resources.
Definitely.
To be able to give these poor people a sandwich. And how about medical care?
Obviously, there's a lot of they don't have opportunity for medical care.
Oh, my goodness. So you were...
I mean, there is medical care in Ethiopia, but if you're a street kid, you're not able to... purchasing a loaf of bread, for example, would be the equivalent of 5 cents. Uh-huh. And so our son, who we end up, meeting on this trip in Ethiopia, he recalled a story of, he would sell little grocery bags in the Mercado, which is the market. Mm-hmm. And if he, made enough money, he would buy a piece of bread.
And so, a piece of bread.
A piece of bread. And he lived on the streets from about 8 to 10 years old. So he, you know, obviously having to work and try to buy a piece of bread can give you a picture of the level of poverty.
So tell me, this was your first trip there.
Yes.
And did you meet your son, the adopted son, in that first trip?
We did.
So you were really moved. Right?
Yes.
I mean,
did
you go there with a thought that you were going to adopt? Or was
absolutely
this,
not.
Oh. So this was a real, real surprise. And absolutely. Presumably you and your husband were both aligned in the outreach or the thought that you had as far as adopting.
Yeah, well, it's a funny story because we had not really discussed it at the time ever. And when we were there, we didn't know it at the time, but on each of our hearts, we very strongly felt God impressing that this boy was our son. Mm-hmm. And I just hypothetically joked with my husband, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't want to, you know, obviously when you say, hey, I really believe this kid is our son, you don't want to freak him out. Mm-hmm. And so all to say, we said, you know, hypothetically speaking, is there a kid that you really feel drawn to? And we, at that point, through a variety of conversations, realized the Lord had put it on both of our hearts that mm-hmm. this was not simply a child, but a part of our family.
And how old was, and his name was it Solomon?
Solomon was our second adoption, Miki.
Miki is your first. So once you decided this, what is the process to actually go through a formal adoption?
It's a very lengthy process. And in fact, it is, I believe adoptions are shut down now in Ethiopia because it also, you know, causes some trafficking and corruption as well. But the process was about a year. So.
Wow, what a story. So from the time that you made the decision that you were going to adopt Miki, how long did it take to actually bring him back here to the United States?
It was about a year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And did he know what was going on?
I don't think so. And we had no, I mean, as the adoption moved forward, he began to understand what was going on. He was the first international adoption from where he lived. So,
did he speak English?
He spoke no English.
Did you speak?
No. It was charades.
So there was a little bit of barrier.
Yeah.
Right. What an inspirational story. Tell us about your second son, Solomon.
Solomon, yeah. So he joined our family about 3 years later.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was another trip to Ethiopia. And by the time his adoption was going through, we were actually had moved to Ethiopia and were living there for a season. And so he joined our family while we were living there. Uh-huh. And then he came, obviously, when we moved back, he came with us.
So this had to have had a pretty big impact on your three children.
Definitely.
We haven't really talked about your three children. Tell us about your three children.
Okay, yeah. So we, prior to adopting, we had two children biologically, mm-hmm. and so they were 5 and 2 when mm-hmm. we adopted Miki, and then 3 years later we adopted Solomon. Mm-hmm. So there were 4 at the time of Solomon's adoption. There was a total of 4.
And what were the kids' reaction when? How did all that integrate?
It was, you know, it was amazing to see my kids fully embrace them. I mean, from the moment we came home and they met us at the airport and they just ran up to Miki and just embraced him. And from the very beginning, he was a brother. And it was that way ever since. I mean, they fought pretty much immediately. So, yeah, uh-huh. just like siblings. And no, but it was definitely a great it was an amazing addition to our family.
And I guess the virtue for the children is they learned a lesson, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, wouldn't they have? And what is it that they learned from this?
Well, I think that, you know, anytime you share your parents with somebody else, you know, it's you learn more and more that it's not always about you. Mm-hmm. You're not the center of the world, you know. And so it was an amazing experience for them as far as, you know, watching how they embraced him and they really loved him. And it never mm-hmm. it's just grown from mm-hmm. the time he joined our family. But also, you know, there were a lot of challenges. We, you know, adopting
there
an older child.
Been.
Yeah, yeah, with trauma and reactive attachment disorder and a lot of these, you know, mm-hmm. things that just come from a background of, you know, trauma. And so there were a lot of challenges in recognizing that it's not only about their life, but it's really about sharing. What we would tell them at a young age was that there are kids that don't have parents, and if that was you, how would you feel? And what would you hope another family would do for you?
What a beautiful lesson.
So, yeah.
You know, a lot of people that we meet, and I'm sure that you come across them too, think that they're the center of the universe.
yeah.
You know, and what a wonderful teaching that you extended to your children.
Yeah, it's been amazing because even, you know, with the adoption and also the ministry, our kids have had to give up a lot as well, you know, moving overseas and leaving friends and family and just a lot of different things that we have chosen to do as a family. They've really had to come, you know, we've got to walk them through, and what a gift as a parent to get to actually walk them through, you know, having to have it not be all about you and not always having things go your way. Yes, we're leaving friends and we're leaving our community to go and serve people who are in need, and giving them the mindset that that's what we do with our lives. We always want our lives to be about giving and serving other people, and what a better time to start than when they're little.
Oh, my goodness sakes. Tarina, we have so much to talk about that I don't know whether we're going to get all this in, but what a beautiful inspiration.
Yeah,
it's remarkable, and this inspiration obviously is not done all by yourself. I mean, you have a loving husband who engages. Both of you engage in this view and this principle and these teachings. Wonderful teachings. We're going to have to take another break. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Oh no, I should say fortunately, but we're going to have to take another quick break.
Okay.
So, listeners, we're going to be right back. If you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and I am here with my guest, Tarina Dutton. Very, very inspiration to have you on our show. I know our listeners are really going to enjoy your show. Let's talk about the other half. Let's talk about your husband. He was an NFL football player. He was in the ACL. He also was a Hall of Famer. Tell us about him.
Yeah, we look back at our wedding picture and laugh. We had no idea the course that our life would take, but, you know, he was drafted out of the University of Nevada. He played quarterback there. He was drafted by the Miami Dolphins. He was released, ended up in Cleveland with the Browns, and about 6 months into his signing with the Browns, he broke his foot and had surgery and was placed on IR.
That was about when?
That was in the year 1999.
Uh-huh.
Last century. Sorry.
Exactly.
Seems like a long time ago, but
right.
No.
So he actually did he play? Did he play games for?
No, he never. He made it about 4 days into training camp. So he was with the Browns for about half a year, but 4 days into training camp, he broke his foot and had surgery, and then he landed in the Arena Football League, and he played there for about 13 years.
The Arena Football League. I'm unfamiliar with that term. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, actually, when he signed with them, we were unfamiliar with it as well, and he thought it would just be. It's a professional indoor league. A lot of NFL players when it was really growing and a lot bigger, there were a lot of NFL players that played there, you know, some of the best, you know, obviously college athletes, but it was a professional league, and he thought he was there temporarily, hoping to go back into the NFL, but he ended up spending 13 years in the Arena Football League.
Uh-huh. Do they pay?
They did. Yeah, they did. Back in 2008, it was really great. From 2000 to 2008, it was really expanding. It was on NBC. There was a lot of growth. John Elway owned a team. John Bon Jovi owned a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2008, when the market crashed, the season or the league suspended, and then it came back in 2010, but it wasn't quite the same.
So what claims did he have at Nevada?
He was an NCAA All-American Honorable Mention. He really, led the nation in passing yards, I believe.
I can see why you two got married.
So, I don't know. Well, we did meet through sports, but...
You did? Actually, you
yes,
did?
Yes, yeah.
He ran track, too?
No, he... Well, just football. But we just, you know, being in the training room and injuries, things like that. So.
you had a... I should say you were here. You had quite a... experience in the stands when your husband broke his arm. And I refer to that as a spiritual experience, but you use a different term. Would you mind telling us about that?
Yeah, so it was after he was cut from the Cleveland Browns. He had surgery,
cut him because he broke his arm.
Yeah, so he was placed on IR, and then he eventually, injured reserve, and then eventually he was cut off of injured reserve. And that's when he signed with the, after he did his rehabilitation, he signed with the Arena Football League, and three games into that season, he broke his arm. So in a span of about 6 months, he had, you know, two surgeries. And so I was sitting up in the stands, and it was the first time I actually ever heard God speak to me. And
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And he I was sitting there and just really praying about, you know, what our future looked like. And it didn't really seem that football
was
a part
of it. Did you have, you didn't have children then?
We had one child.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was sitting in the stands, and the Lord actually said, the bowl is John's.
Said the bowl?
The bowl is John's.
What did that mean?
Well, we were actually in playoffs, and because he obviously missed the season through the injury, I was just really praying about, was football in the future at all for him? And so for the bowl being John's, I really took away, at that time, I felt like God was saying if we went to the Arena Bowl that John would be playing in it. And so I, after the game, just ran up to him and said, yeah, this crazy thing happened. And he looked at me kind of like, what? God said that to you? What are you talking about? And thought, okay, we'll see.
It wasn't a text message, right?
No. I don't think we had a phone. But anyway, so yeah, I came up to him after the game and told him what God had said.
And how did you both accept that?
It was the first time anything like that had ever happened, and so we just tucked it away and thought, we'll see what happens. And so 2 years later, we were at a church service, and we had a guy speak a word over us, and basically he said, you're to get ready to see me move. And so that whole season, my husband was back up and just leading the Bible study with the team. And second to last game of the year, the quarterback had gone down with a broken collarbone injury, and my husband went in. So.
And
so, yeah, he went in. And at the time, the season was undefeated. And so I was listening on the radio, and they were talking all about this undefeated season. He went in at the very end of the game and threw a bad ball, incomplete, lost the game. And that was his first step back onto the field, basically. And so, again, I was just really praying, going, we don't know if this is what God has for him.
What's supposed to happen, right?
And he called me, and actually, this is the second time I ever heard God speak. And he said, we're going to play Arizona in the Arena Bowl. You're going to play Arizona in the Arena Bowl, and you're going to win. And when he answered the phone, or I just gushed that out to him, and he said, what? And we ended up actually telling the team ahead of time. So we had a Bible study. We told the leader. We told all of the guys, this is what God said. We're going to play Arizona in the Arena Bowl, and we're going to win. And sure enough, I believe it was about 6 weeks later, that's exactly what happened. The Arizona played, made it through playoffs. We made it through playoffs. And we played Arizona in the Arena Bowl. We won, and my husband was the MVP, so the bowl was John's. So, yeah.
I'm gasping. That's profound.
It was incredible.
That added enormous amount of belief and faith.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Just a remarkable story.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So do you and your husband think about that or talk about that?
Absolutely. It actually happened again 3 years later.
Really?
A similar situation.
You want to tell us, share that with us, too?
Sure. Yeah, my husband played for the Colorado Crush. John Elway owned the team. And I was sitting in the stands. We hadn't made playoffs. Chicago hadn't made playoffs. San Jose hadn't made playoffs. And the Lord said to me, we're going to play San Jose and Chicago in playoffs and win. And so my husband actually, with much dread, pulled the whole team together after a team meeting. There was coaches, staff, some of his personnel in the meeting, and he told the whole team what happened in San Jose. And then he said, this is what God spoke to my wife. And we didn't, at this point, I mean, we didn't even know if we were going to be in playoffs as well as the other two teams. And we ended up playing San Jose and Chicago in playoffs and winning. So,
wow. Pretty, just remarkable. An inspiration.
Yeah.
So we have two adopted children.
Mm-hmm.
When did you? What was the thought that precipitated you opening a store?
Being in an area in Ethiopia called Prostitute Row, we saw
Prostitute Row.
Yeah, it was called Prostitute Row, and it was a place where they were selling girls to feed the family. And so, girls about 10 to 12 years old were being sold at night to put food on the table. And my older son, Solomon. Was also left out of home for 7 years because his mom couldn't afford to feed him. And so through a variety of circumstances and seeing oftentimes many of the kids that are abandoned and orphaned or trafficked are it's simply because they don't have an opportunity to make a living.
There's no choice.
And so we decided to get into the creating a marketplace. There's a lot of amazing projects and ministries around the world that are providing jobs and creating jobs that are, teaching people how to sew, teaching them how to make jewelry and leather goods, things we buy anyway. And so we decided to create a marketplace where these items could be sold, and that money would basically help to create sustainability for families around the world, mm-hmm. and therefore prevent the circumstances that lead to a child being trafficked, abandoned, and orphaned. So
the seed was planted.
Yes.
And what took place next?
And so we began to meet with different projects where they had all kinds of amazing, beautiful product. I mean, a lot of times, I didn't know this before, but Ethiopia is actually, leather is a big one of their exports. And Italian leather is often sourced in Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
So they have beautiful product. And so we would see these amazing ministries and projects where women were making these leather purses, for example. And the product is just stacked to the ceiling because they don't have an outlet to sell their mm-hmm. items. And if they're, so you can give jobs and you can teach them how to sew and you can give them a job skill. But if there's, if they don't have the opportunity to sell it.
Yeah, if product doesn't move, it just
doesn't
sits
move.
If
it sits there, and then there's still no sustainability. There's mm-hmm. still no way for them to support themselves and their families.
So the idea of a retail manifested itself.
Exactly.
And that next step was to open up a store.
Exactly.
And you operate that store from here in Northern California?
I do.
How
right
do you
in
do
McLeod.
That?
So we basically, when we decided to create a marketplace for them, there was the building that we moved into. We had just moved back from Uganda, and we moved into McLeod, and it just so happened to have a storefront already set up. And so I was familiar with a lot of amazing ministries around the world, and so all we simply did was create a marketplace for them to sell it. And so we, we actually started it overseas. The first one we opened was in Jinja, Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved back here, we eventually transferred that over. And so our headquarters is here in McLeod.
But you still operate that store?
No, we did for about 2 years. And then once we opened the store here, we transferred it over.
So opening up a retail store in a town that has 1,100 population doesn't sound like a high traffic area.
Right. A lot of tourists.
Yeah. Oh, is that largely feed your businesses?
Yeah.
Tourism, huh?
Yes, tourism.
And do you have visions for other stores?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, we...
I like the way you said that. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people come in the store and they love the idea that they can buy a leather purse that's actually rescuing a girl who's been trafficked.
Boy, given a choice, absolutely.
Exactly.
Sure.
Or you can buy a pair of earrings that is supporting a widow who, you know, lost her husband and has no way, you know, there's not the services uh-huh. set up in their country to, you know, feed themselves. And uh-huh. so you actually can buy a pair of earrings that are helping to a mother to keep her child and not have to give them up to an orphanage. And mm-hmm. so many people come in the store and they not only love the quality of the products and and everything and what it's about, but they mm-hmm. want the opportunity to shop where they live. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I often have people, oh, I wish the store was in my town and I wish the store was in my area. And I think mm-hmm. I really want that opportunity for the purpose of the bigger the marketplace,
sure.
the more that you support these ministries.
Absolutely. So I presume that all of your wares, I mean, the items that you sell, are all made in from different parts of the world?
Absolutely. 27 different ministries and projects in 20 countries.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds like a really big job.
It's a lot of work, but it's uh-huh. amazing. I love it.
And both you and your husband have hands-on in the business, or does your husband work?
Absolutely. Well, he actually, he has a ministry called Athletes for the Nations.
Uh-huh.
And so he is also running that and coaching, and he helps me as well. So
tell me about your husband's ministry.
So Athletes for the Nations, the whole vision is to, you know, he was an athlete and his, well, we both were, and our goal was always to be successful, you know, to reach our dreams or to become an Olympic, you know, athlete or NFL athlete for him. And through a variety of circumstances, God really shifted our focus to the reason why we've been given the platform that we have and that it's all about being significant. You know, I look at the story of Esther in the Bible, and I love that story because she was put in the palace, but it wasn't just to enjoy the pleasure and the comfort and the, you know, security the palace provided, but it was for those outside the gate. And so, you know, really Athletes for the Nations is about that. It's using whatever platform or success you've been given to make a difference in the lives of others. That it's not about us. It's really about the people. It's about using
everybody else.
Yeah, it's about everyone else.
Putting more than you take on in life. So what activities does he have to spread the word of this foundation?
So we run sport camps. We're partnered with a few projects overseas where we have sports camps. We do athletic training. And we do a lot of character work off the field. So it's not about simply creating great athletes on the field. We want to make great men and women, you know.
Off the field,
off
too.
Off the field as well.
And is that going pretty well?
Yeah. We actually just recently, my husband is coaching football up in McLeod. It's the first time in 16 years they've had sports.
Kidding.
So they have a total of 36 students, and they had enough to field an 8-man football team. And they went 7-1, so it was good.
So he's doing a good job.
It's been good.
So what is what is your basic vision to opening up more stores?
In opening up more stores, it's, you know, just, again, creating the opportunity to expand the market, give more people the ability to shop purposefully. And, you know, when you think of even something like a cup of coffee, we even source our coffee ethically. And so how many people drink coffee? And
I mean, to think of 200 million.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, to even think of where we purchase our coffee, that we can purchase our coffee from a project that's providing an education, giving clean water, building medical clinics and churches and schools. You know, again, it's trying to shift the way that we shop and to just become more purposeful in how we spend our resources. So,
mm-hmm. Wow. You know, Tarina, we're going to have to take another quick break.
Okay.
And listeners, we're going to be right back. Thank you. If you're just joining us, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio. And I have today Tarina Dutton, a very inspiring guest, very inspiring. And Tarina, we were talking about your vision of opening up more stores. What do you ultimately see? What would be the ultimate dream in terms of this mission of yours of selling these crafts, creating employment, creating dollars to help these countries, the children, prostitution, trafficking, and so forth and so on? What is the ultimate vision that you foresee right now in terms of marketing additional crafts?
Well, obviously, you know, when you think of expanding the marketplace, what you're really doing is you're giving these ministries and projects the opportunity to bring more children in from off the streets or keep more families together. You know, we have a, you know, let's say Heal ministries, for example, if a mother is abandoning her baby, the local police will ask her, do you want to keep your child? And most of the time she says yes. And so they say, go to Heal. Heal takes the mother and the child in. They give the child an education. They teach the mother how to make jewelry or sew. And then when we sell that product, it actually is supporting the ability for a mother to keep her child. And so the more that we expand the market, the more women and children we're able to save, the more families we're able to keep together, the more children, you know, we keep from being trafficked, et cetera. And so my vision is obviously to create as big of a marketplace as possible. So I
presume that these goods are on sort of like on consignment, that they're sold and they get a certain percentage of. No.
So we actually we buy everything up front from the ministries. So they get their money up front, regardless if we sell it.
Oh, I see.
Right, and then when we
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, the fruits of their work are right now.
Yeah. So we buy it from them up front. They get their money, and then when we sell it, we reorder more.
Uh huh.
So it's not simply a portion of proceeds. Uh-huh. When you think of sourcing, you know, things wholesale, we're not sourcing from some place we don't know and working with the 50%. We're actually sourcing it from the ministries and projects themselves. So they're already getting their money up front. When we sell it, we reorder more, and so you're really shifting.
Trina, you strike me as a very intelligent business lady.
I don't know, but
what did you study in school? What are your degrees in?
My degree is in health ecology.
In health and ecology.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. So more sports science.
I see. No math, huh?
No math.
No bookkeeping. Well, you certainly are a visionary. There's certainly no question about that. And explain to us your inspiration. What do you hang your hat on, and what keeps you going?
I really think of. Of everything that drives my husband and I, it really is the two greatest commandments. When Jesus said to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, and that sums up the book of the law. And so really, when we think about what that looks like, it looks like us being third, you know, God first, others. And really what drives us is I feel like the more that God changes our hearts, the more that our hearts are really burdened. It feels as though we have his heart for the broken, the outcast, the the poor, because that's who he is, and he loves people. And so that really drives us. We just really feel a deep love and burden for people.
And I would assume that this compassion, this love is transferred to your children.
We hope so, yeah. We definitely.
Do you see signs that they've got it?
I do for the most part, yeah. I mean, my little obviously is, we'll see, but definitely. I mean, everything we do is as a family. It's not my husband and I's ministry. We brought our kids on everything, on every outreach that we did. They obviously lived overseas with us. We never wanted it to be separate. It was something that we wanted to do together. And I think what a better way than to, when we talk about raising up children who give back to the community and are making a difference in their community, is there a better way to do that than start when they're really young? And so everything that we've done in an age-appropriate manner, we've always had them serving alongside with us. So
the two adopted boys, they've merged into our culture.
Absolutely.
I'm sure it's been an enormous learning curve with them. So how do they see things right now?
Well, our one son, he actually goes to Simpson University right here in Reading.
Does he really?
Yeah, he just finished his junior. Well, he's a senior, but he plays soccer. And it was his third language, and has above a 3.0. So it's been incredible to watch his transformation and just.
And this is Solomon, or is this?
Solomon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, to so complete college in his third language is
amazing.
So he's
18, 19 years old then?
He's 22.
So he's well embedded to the American culture and how we do things.
Absolutely. And him and my other son, Miki, are both planning to go back to Ethiopia this summer. And so I am speaking in your previous question. They already are looking for opportunities as to, you know, what can we do to give back to our culture and where we're from. So.
Wow. Just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So you have to have a tremendous sense of gratitude.
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny because often people would say, you know, wow, you've really changed their life. And we say often, no, I think they've changed our life. So We're really grateful for everything that God has done. He writes the greatest stories. You know, we could have never actually perceived these guys, young men now, joining our family. But but no, it's been incredible.
Have you coined a motto for life?
You know, our mission statement for our ministry is to lead, nurture, and inspire the faith, character, and service of our future generations.
Well, I think you inspired Lily and myself today.
I hope so.
And our countless listeners.
I hope so.
So you're hitting the mark. Well, what a beautiful motto or mission statement to live by. What advice would you give others? Just general advice. What advice could you lend to others?
Well, I think, you know, when I look at, you know, I think a lot of people right now, there's so much negative, you know, media and different things going on. But I think, you know, if we really lived a life laid down for people and really loved and served our communities, you know, how would things look differently? Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, I'm just really... It's amazing to think of the opportunity that we have here in America, and in light of, you know, half of the world lives on less than $2 a day. And so when I think of the resources amazing. That we have put in our hands and mm-hmm. how we can actually, so many people want to make a difference. They don't know how. And so it's not that they don't want to. It's just, you know, what do? I don't know how to mm-hmm. help. And so to think of even something like shopping, for example, where you can do something that you do anyways and you can actually change a life, you know, I really want to encourage people to think about what do they do with their time? What do they do with their resources? What do they do mm-hmm. with their talents? Because mm-hmm. If everyone really lived a life laid down and served others and served their community, mm-hmm. things would look a lot different.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
You know, Tarina, we're pulling up to the end of the show, unfortunately, and I'm going to give you the opportunity for you to speak to our listeners and ourselves. Just on anything that you would like to leave with us, or something to say.
Awesome. Well, obviously I'm really thankful to be a part of your show, and for those of you listening, I just really want to encourage you to recognize that you have something to give to this world, that God has created you and has given you gifts and talents and purpose. And so, you know, we really, you know, my husband and I, for a long time, we pursued success, and it never satisfies. But when you think about giving back, you know, and living out your purpose and blessing other people, you can really make a great impact.
Well, Tarina, has been just an inspiration to have you on our show. It really has been. And I thank you very much for spending the time with us and with me.
Yeah, it was an honor.
And so thank you for being here. You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website at kkrn.org and click on the donate button, or make a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. Please tune in to my shows each first and third Tuesday of each month. At 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, here you will listen to another triumphant human story. I would love to hear from you, so please send me an email at Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, at kkrn.org, or pick up the phone and call me at 530-356-9811. And I thank you for listening.